Okay, so we're going to begin with Sefer Yehoshua, and Sefer Yehoshua is the perfect timing to begin Sefer Yehoshua. The beginning of Sefer Yehoshua is the Haftorah for the laying on Simchas Torah. We just read it in Shul, but again, as we finish making Siyum on the Torah, so the next step certainly is the book of Yehoshua. Who wrote Sefer Yehoshua? The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that Yehoshua wrote Sefer Yehoshua. Yehoshua wrote Sefer Yehoshua, and he also wrote, although this is a little bit more subject, Machlokas, the last eight psukim of the Torah. So there is a little bit more of dissenting opinions as to how the last eight psukim of the Torah were written. But Yehoshua authored the Sefer himself. What's the purpose of Sefer Yehoshua? So again, so in general, the purpose of much of what the Nevi'im teach us is Musar, but in Sefer Yehoshua it's much more stories, and tells us about Yerushas Aretz and Chalukas Aretz, how Bnei Yisrael conquered the land of Israel, how they took control of it. So the Gemara Nedarim says that Sefer Yehoshua ultimately is about teaching us Erka Shel Aretz Yisrael, the value and appreciation of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so let's begin. Because after Moshe, the servant of Hashem, dies, so Hashem says to Yehoshua ben Nun, the one who served Moshe, saying. So right away, the question of, I think they're out there in the hallway. They never made it back into this room. The Vayihi. So the question is what is the Vav doing? When you have a Vav at the beginning of a Sefer, what is that Vav doing? So Rashi says, Vayihi acharei mos Moshe, mechubar al seder ha-Torah ha-mesayemes b'tiras Moshe v'zeh mechubar la. And it's indicated that there's a continuation. And we concluded the Torah with the death of Moshe. Here, Yehoshua is, or the Navi is telling us about the death of Moshe and what came subsequently. So Vayihi connects, and this transition from the end of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah to the Sifrei Hanaviim, to the Sefer of Yehoshua. The other Mefarshim, however, I think it's the Radak says, "Vayihi acharei mos Moshe min ha'galashon nichtov b'mekom ovav shelo lohosiv l'chaber davar al davar." That's not necessarily true. Sometimes, and again, there's no letter that's used more frequently in the Torah than the letter Vav. And sometimes the letter Vav will appear in a context in which it's not necessarily connecting two things. So the doctor says it's a stylistic thing. That when the Navi begins with Vayihi, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a connection between two. Because if you don't say that, then there'll be other situations in which it'll be very difficult to understand the pasuk. If you assume that every time there's a Vav, it must connect the two things. And he goes through many examples of that. Just the way that a sefer begins. He says Milas Vayihi Timsa Baschelas Advarim. Often Vayihi is a word which is just used to indicate that we're beginning something new. It says, you see it, Vayihi b'mei Shvuah Shoftim, when it comes to Megillas Surus. This was in the time of the Shoftim, and it starts with Vayihi. Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh. It's not connecting it to anything specific which came before it, but that word is just a word that the Torah uses, or the Navi uses, Torah Shabbasav uses, in order to connect things.
Sometimes the word Vayihi indicates that bad things are about to
happen. That's what the Gemara, that the Gemara Megillah talks about. Right, when with Vayihi b'mei, when does Vayihi mean something good, or when does it mean something bad? Correct. But, good. So that's Vayihi acharei mos Moshe Eved Hashem. So, after Moshe, the Eved Hashem dies, Vayomer Hashem Yehoshua, so Hashem says to Yehoshua ben Nun, this Mesharis of Moshe is saying. So why was it that, again, just to try and, I guess, picture the situation a little bit, is it taking place right after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu? How long after, whether it was right after the Shloshim of Moshe, seems to be the way that many understood, but it's right on the heels of the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Yehoshua is now tasked with stepping into that role, And it's certainly not an easy one. Moshe is the first real leader of Bnei Yisrael. He is the one who's known as Rabbeinu. He was the Mekabel Torah. He had Nevuah in a singular way and nobody else will ever have. And now Yehoshua has to step up to the task of being the new leader of Bnei Yisrael. And he's not the sons of Moshe. It could be there would have been some who would have thought that it's more similar to the way that a king or a monarchy is passed on from one generation to the next. Maybe Moshe's sons should be the ones to take over, and not Yehoshua. Yehoshua is thrust into this role of having to really step up and be the leader. Why was it that Yehoshua was chosen over the sons of Moshe? So Chazal tell us, it seems because he was Misharis Moshe. It was because of the Shemush. It was because of the way that he served Moshe Rabbeinu, and then in that ability of humbling himself and spending the time in taking care of and together with Moshe Rabbeinu, that was beyond just the Chachma that he acquired, was that he learned how one should conduct himself. And that was part of what Yehoshua uniquely was able to learn. The end of the pasuk says he calls Yehoshua ben Nun. So why is the Yehoshua? I think he's the only one in Tanakh who, instead of it saying ben, it says bin. It says with the chirik, with the e, instead of saying it the typical way, which would be ben. So why is that? Again, I don't think you find it by anybody, any other person in Tanakh. So the Radak says that the reason is binum bechirik kimo besegel. It means the same thing as if it was written with the segel, with the eh. V'amar bechamaka binun bechirik v'lo yomar bechem em besegel k'mo shu minag bro v'shehen yidbako shemilos lo v'shehen milos ziros v'nidbakos. It says it's because that binun together is a very short sound. And when you're having these two short words together, the smichos, the connection between the two words, it can change the punctuation in a way that makes it easier to say. So since binun flows a little better than benun, where it would be a little bit more of a stronger sound on the under the base, he says that's the only reason. There's nothing special about Yehoshua per se. It's just a grammatical way of writing. And therefore that's why it's written as bin nun. Okay, so let's try the next one. That one didn't go over. So the Ramban. Okay, the Ramban says in Parashas Kisisa, in I think Parak Lama Gimel Pasuk Yudalef, whatever it was down, that it's Derech Kavod. That was supposed to be an honorific title almost for Yehoshua. That the combination of bin nun is similar to like the shorash of Navon. It means that somebody who's a chacham. So in order, oh, Navon, right? Right, exactly. Oh man, should we just like Yehoshua?
Could Ben be also from the same Bina?
It could be, but the combination of it together, of this binun, creates this word which he says is a somehow synonymous or another word for chacham. So that it is special to Yehoshua, and it was to take his name, which was there, meaning his father's name, Rabban is denying that his father's name was Nun, but the Torah designed it to be said in such a way that it would include this title of kavod for Yehoshua. The most famous answer, I think, is that, or is the more recent answer, it comes from the Chozem Lublin. That's the answer that I remember learning many years ago in school. And that is because there had to be a balancing out of different letters that have been shifted around. Hashem took the Yud from Sarai and put a Hey instead for Sarah. So where is that Yud now going to end up? The Yud was taken from this great Tzaddik, because the Yud had to go somewhere. So when Moshe Rabbeinu changes the name of Hoshea to Yehoshua in Parshas Shlach, so now that Yud had a place to go. So that was the Yud from Sarai, which was put in Yehoshua. But the problem is that the Yud at the end of Sarai has no punctuation under it. It's the end of the word. So the Yud at the end of the Resh only accentuates the sounds of the Resh. It doesn't have its own sound. So the Yud needed to have a sound. So really it should have been Ben, but the two of the three dots were taken out from the ben and put under the yud, and that's the shva for Yehoshua.
Say that again.
Which part? From where? The beginning?
There was nothing under the yud for Sarai.
So now if you stick a yud without any sound at the beginning of Hosea, you don't have anything. You have a letter there. You don't have a sound.
Right. So you took the bump.
So really, it's Hosea ben Nun in theory.
Oh, so they took the two
of the three dots and made it into a shva.
And made it into a shva.
Exactly.
No, because then it would have been.
I don't know. That
Yeshua could have been Yehoshua.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they just keep it as the segol?
Yay.
Yehoshua? No, because then the.
And you took it from the.
No, because then the ben wouldn't have a sound.
Oh, you
wouldn't help anything. You need to have a sound under both. So you couldn't take away everything.
Okay.
You couldn't take everything.
Okay, that's why I didn't get it.
Right. You can't take everything away from the bass, because then we're going back to the same problem that we started with the yud.
Okay, the other thing, I'm just going to say, when you said Vayihi.
Yes.
Well, so now it makes sense that it was Vayihi, because if you're saying a continuation, if everybody thought it should be Moshe's sons.
I don't know that everybody thought that, but there were probably those who thought. Right.
So the Vayihi was necessary to start the Sefer to show that it was in a continuation of what Moshe was
good.
Also.
Yeah, I think that point. That point will become even clearer from other things that are written in the Psukim. Yeah, but I think that point is very is crucial.
Okay.
Is that we do need to show that there's a seamless transition,
right,
between the leadership of Moshe and the leadership of Yehoshua. The other interesting point in Pasuk Aleph is the description of Yehoshua. Is that Yehoshua is described as Mishares Moshe. Moshe, on the other hand, is described as Eved Hashem. By the end of the Sefer, in Perek Chav Dalet, the Navi talks about Yehoshua. And it says, Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Chav Tes, Vahi acharei advarim ha'ela, Vayomas Yehoshua ben Nun, Eved Hashem. By the end of his life, he's certainly, again, it's hard to say, you can't say reach the level. In some things you can't, again, Chazal tells that everybody has to try to strive like Moshe Rabbeinu. So what does that mean? We can't be like Moshe Rabbeinu. So we can be like Moshe Rabbeinu, except when it comes to Nevuah. The only thing which we have to believe and that we're told is that nobody else can be a Navi in the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Navi. You can be a Tzaddik, you can be a Tzaddik just like Moshe Rabbeinu. You can work and go close to Hashem like Moshe Rabbeinu, but not in the realm of Nevuah. Right, and then you have the realm. So Yehoshua, it sounds like, really did accomplish, again, in terms of the way that he began as the Mishari, described as the Misharis Moshe, and that was juxtaposed with the fact that Moshe was Eved Hashem in the first Pasuk, and by the time he dies at the end of the Sefer, he's also given that title and that description of Eved Hashem. Okay. So Hashem speaks to Yehoshua now and says, right, the first pasuk was an introduction that Hashem is about to talk to Yeshua. What does he say? So he says, pasuk veiz, Moshe avdi meis. Moshe, my servant, has died. V'ata, and now, kum avoras hayarden hazeh, go and cross over the Jordan River. Ata, you, v'chol amazen, this entire nation, el ha'arat asher anochim nosein lo'am b'nei Yisrael, and go to the land that I have promised for the Jewish people. We already know that Moshe Rabbeinu died. We know from the end of the Torah, and we know it more, recently from the previous pasuk. Right, it started out by Hi Acharei Mos Moshe Eved Hashem. Right after the death of Moshe, Hashem speaks to him. Then Hashem begins talking to him and says, Moshe Avdi Meis. Of course, Moshe Avdi Meis. We already know that. Why did Hashem begin that nevuah with Moshe Avdi Meis? So Rashi comments, and Rashi says, Moshe Avdi Meis. V'ilu hayakayim bo hayisi chafetz. And if Moshe was still alive, I would choose Moshe Rabbeinu, not you. That's a tough beginning for Yehoshua. He was already trying to step into a difficult situation. Yehoshua was trying to take over for Moshe. And the first thing that Hashem says is, but you should know that if I had the choice, I would choose Moshe Rabbeinu and not you. maybe it's true. But, you know, did he really need to tell him that? There were no better words of encouragement that God could start out with when sending Yeshua on this mission that he's taking over for Moshe. So I think perhaps at least one of two ideas. The first is that you just see the nature of the proper leaders, is that Yeshua wasn't in this for the kavod. It wasn't about him. Yeshua took over as the leader instead of Moshe because God said, we need you to step up to the plate. You are the right person for the job. From Yeshua's perspective, he doesn't need it. It wasn't about him. And once it's not about him and it's not about personal gain, so there's nothing insulting about the fact that, okay, if Moshe was here, Moshe would be doing it. Yeshua would be the first one to tell you that Moshe should be the one doing it. So by starting out in this way, it appears oftentimes when people are elevated to positions of power, it's because they want to be in that position. If the person wants to be in that position, and then you start out by saying, we don't want you, we want somebody else, it's particularly insulting. But when the person doesn't want it, and the only reason the person is stepping up, is, and the person that him or herself realizes, that I'm only doing it because the person who would be better, the Moshe Rabbeinu, isn't there, there's nothing insulting about it. And even more than that, which is the second point, is that maybe it even gives him a little bit of chizuk, which is that really Moshe Rabbeinu should be doing this, and yet I think you can do this. If Moshe Rabbeinu was here, it would require Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is not here, but I don't give up. I think you can do it. Yeshua, you are the person who can step up to the plate instead of Moshe Rabbeinu. And if Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to be here, you were the right hand man, you were the Mesharis Moshe, you were the one who saw how he conducted himself with the people, for the people, doing whatever needed to be done, and therefore without Moshe here, you are the right person for the job. And that's maybe what he's highlighting. It wasn't about Yeshua, and once it's not about Yeshua, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is slowly pushing him in the direction of realizing, in a certain level, you're stepping into the role of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that comes with its challenges. But you should realize that I want you, and I have faith, and I entrust you with that sacred task. That's how Rashi understands the Moshe Avdi Meis. The Malbim has a different approach. The Malbim says that it was a much more, he mentions this point also, but the main thrust of what he says is the second point, which is that Moshe Avdi Meis, and it's only because Moshe has died, that's why you can go into the Yardin. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't allowed. So you're right, the circumstances were such that we described in the first pasuk that this is all taking place after Moshe dies. But what's important for the next phase, Hashem wants to tell Yeshua, now it's time to go up into the to cross and to enter Eretz Yisrael. He has to proceed that with, because Moshe is not here, because Moshe wasn't allowed to. Moshe made a mistake, Moshe was punished, and Moshe is not allowed to go into the land. But now that Moshe is not here, Moshe Abdi Meis, now kum, get up. And some of our say kum is always a language of zeros. You have to get to it. Now we have a new phase that we have to go into. If Moshe Rabbeinu was still here, we wouldn't be able to go into the land yet, because that wasn't the place for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had already been told that there is no way that he can enter the land. So again, two approaches.
So maybe that's a little bit like when Adam didn't want to go out from the Teva. Noah didn't go out from the Teva, from the ark, and he had to take stay to start again.
Right.
So maybe the same thing, it's a very similar thing.
Come, go.
That even Moshe died, you could be depressed and say, oh, who's, he himself could be saying, I'm not like Moshe, I can't do it.
Right.
How am I going to do it? And he's saying, go, you come, you can do it. Very similar, let's say, go, rebuild and do.
Beautiful. Super. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the introductory the psukim here. But again, knowing that the purpose of the beginning of the sefer is this transition, so the focus on Moshe and shifting to Yeshua is very, very important. So what does Hashem tell Moshe, Yeshua? To not just get up and go, but kol makom bazagim, kol makom asher tidroch kafra adlechem, bo, lochem nesativ. Anywhere which you walk, that's I'm giving to you. Kasher dibarti al Moshe, as I said to Moshe. The next pasuk describes the borders. Mehamidbar v'halvanon hazev arad nahar gadol nahar paras, from the desert of Kadesh, the far say, to Lebanon, to the Euphrates, Kleretz Achitim, v'ariyam gadol, until the Mediterranean. V'vohasham eshek v'vohchem, those are the borders. So what's the purpose of this? These pesukim? It's merely to tell us the borders. It tells us, koma koma asher tidroch kaf ragachem bo, anywhere which you walk, lachem nesativ. So if that's just the same thing as the borders, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu need to describe it in such a way as everywhere where you walk, that's where you're going to be able to get to the Yerusha. So Rashi comments, says, Koma koma sher tidroch, anywhere in which your footstep. Kayot zivunem are the Moshe, something similar was said to Moshe, v'shanin b'sifrei. Im l'lamin al-tchum eretz Yisrael, if it's coming just to teach us what are the borders of the land of Israel, Harei Yehomer, it says it, Mehmet Barba al-Vanon HaZeh. The next pasuk already told us in great detail where the borders of Israel are. So I don't need the pasuk to say it, and everywhere you step. Im kein mama nemar koma koma sher tidroch kaf. So why do I need to say anywhere where you tread? Af chutzlaretz, misha tichbush osaretz, koma she tichbushu mechutzlaretz, yekodesh v'yeshalachem. Rashi says what Yeshua is being told by Hashem is that if you, in the process of conquering the borders that I've described to Eretz Yisrael, if you conquer further, that becomes part of Eretz Yisrael also. Koma koma she tijoch kafrag lechem.
Isn't that reminiscent of the
Lechocha?
When Abraham had to,
it was part of the bris. The point here is there it seems maybe within the borders. There's within the borders. Here what Rashi is saying based on Chazal is that he's telling him that the special, again, there are two aspects to conquering the land. One is control of the land, but the aspect which is important when it comes to Eretz Yisrael is the Kedusha Saaretz, is that there's a holiness to the land, which means if you grow things there, you're going to have to take trumas and maestros. All those mitzvos at tzliyos baretz, all those kinds of things, are they going to apply to the land or not? What Yeshua was told was that anywhere that they conquer in the context of this battle will become and have full status of Eretz Yisrael. In light of that, then what the pasuk says is fascinating, because what does it say? It says, "Bo lachem nisativ," says that I have given it to you. I would think that if it's talking about beyond the borders of the land, that you could extend further, then it should say lachem etenena. It should say it in the future tense. Mm-hmm. Then that's what I will give to you. And yet, even when it's talking about the expansion beyond the basic borders, it says it in the past tense. It's not quoted in this Sefer Mishpat Zozav. That's what you see. You see the greatness of what of this gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them, was that somehow included in the original intent, and that's how it worked. Was that it wasn't that Yeshua was given a special power to infuse Kedushas Haaretz into Chutz La'aretz, but it was that would reveal that was originally that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended for that also to be part of Eretz Yisrael, even though it wasn't part of the original borders. Which is again just that last point really is just based on the reading the pasuk carefully, but the fundamental point is really the one that Rashi says, which is that Yeshua was given this unique koach, and later when the Olei Bavel or anybody else comes back to the land and they do it, they don't have that same power. It's a much more difficult process. Gemara talks about different places. If there's a way of expanding, you need the Melech, you need maybe most of Bnei Yisrael. You know, how exactly you go about annexing area which isn't technically part of Eretz Yisrael and infusing it with Kedushas Haaretz, how that's possible is much more difficult. But Yeshua was given that. Yeshua was given that that ability.
So how would that affect us today?
I don't think it would. Not a big. We have problems with the basic borders. If we can get the basic borders, then we can worry about the expanding them, expanding beyond. Halavai, we should be able to.
Look at this. Could you tell me what
process
this is?
It is Gimel.
Process Gimel.
Yeah, we're moving at rapid speed here. Parak Aleph. Process Gimel.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll try to hit the guest pedal.
So I want to bring that up for more.
Okay. Think twice before quoting me. Make sure it's good. It's the right context.
This does tell us that Abraham is Racha, Reuven, Dan, Hasi, Shimon, Menashe. That's part of Eretz Israel.
So that's a bigger discussion. Also, that's a that. It seems to be, has to be that on some level it's part of Eretz Yisrael, but it might not have full Kedusha Saris. But that's not because of this. That would be because of what happened in Chumash. But it's very hard to imagine that Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevi Menashe were willing to settle outside something which is the status of Israel. But I think we spoke about it maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. And it has to be that there is some sort of status of Eretz Yisrael too, whether it's a full-fledged status, whether it's a secondary status. I think what we suggested in the end was that it has, because the flip side is that if it is Eretz Yisrael, so how can Moshe be there?
Yes.
That's the problem with saying that it's, one of the problems with saying that it's Eretz Yisrael.
It wasn't allowed
in Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. So I think the suggestion that we had made at that time was that it was, its Kedusha of being Eretz Yisrael was contingent upon settling the rest of the land. So that in the end, Reuven, Gad, Chatzi Shevi Menashe were not giving up a portion of Eretz Yisrael, but it only had the status of being a part of Eretz Yisrael after they conquered what was on the proper side of the Ardain. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe was there, it wasn't Eretz Yisrael, it only became Eretz Yisrael at a later time. If you say that, it answers almost all of those questions. The Malbim says, "What's Komokom Asher Tidur Kafragachem Bo?" He says that it's to highlight the difference between the conquering of Moshe and Yeshua. That had it been that Moshe had not sinned, and Moshe would have been able to go into Eretz Yisrael, the conquering would have taken place through Tidur Kafragachem. There wouldn't have been any fights. They would have just been walking through the land. The enemies drop, and we take over the land. But he tells Yeshua, you should realize, anywhere where that would have worked, you're still going to get it, but now you have to fight for it. Achit Gorim, Malbim says that. That the new reality is that you need to fight for it, but don't think you're going to lose out on any of Eretz Yisrael because of that. It's the same amount of area where Moshe Rabbeinu would have gotten, you will now be able to settle as well. Okay, Pasukai. Hashem tells Yeshua something fascinating. And yes.
So then I have a question. So then you just said that whatever land he conquers, even further than the borders that were named,
The Malbim doesn't say that.
Okay, somebody else does. Rashi says that Eretz would be Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
So if Moshe was allowed to walk through without fighting and conquer the land, then it would have had to stay within that area.
Maybe yes, maybe no, I don't know. I don't know if there's any way to know for sure which was certainty one way or the other. But also the Malbim and the Rashi are disagreeing, so that one necessarily doesn't have to, you know, fully agree with the other.
Wasn't half of Menashe didn't ask to be on the other side.
That's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says that he basically needed somebody. They might have been in the end. They agreed to it, but Menashe was pretty big, so the land on the was too big on the Avar Yarden for two tribes. So we needed to stick another, at least half a tribe over there.
Or it could be somebody that didn't want to stay there, that didn't request it, so that they could be an influence for the people that did request it for generations, so that they would go back into Eretz Yisrael like us.
Maybe, except that at this point, if you assume that it had the status of Eretz Yisrael, then I'm not sure if later they would have the right to abandon it. But okay, interesting. The Pasuk again, considering that Yeshua is taking over as leader, there's probably no better promise than what comes up now. Hashem tells him, Lo yisatev ish lefanecha ko yimechayecha. Nobody is going to stand up and question your leadership for the entirety of your life. And that bracha goes beyond even Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had to deal with Korach. He had to deal with people questioning his authority. And Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Yeshua, you're not going to have to worry about that. You are the leader, and you're the questionable leader. And just as I was there together with Moshe helping him along the way, lo arpecha v'lo ezek, I will not weaken you, I will not abandon you. And then he says the famous word, which he's going to repeat three times here. Moshe Rabbeinu also tells them three times to Yeshua and Sefer Dvarim. He says, Chazak v'amatz, you need to be strong. Different versions try to figure out what one means over the other. Malbim says, strengthen yourself is chazak v'amatz. Take that strength and you have to put it into action. It's not enough just to prepare yourself. You have to do something with it. The Gaon says it's two different aspects of strength. First, you have the physical strength, build yourself up, but you need emotional strength also. If you're going to be a leader, you're going to be fighting, you can't be scared. You have to be strong. You're the one who's going to help the people settle the land. This land that I promised to them. Rak chazak v'amatz ma'od, and he says you have to be very, very strong, not just about conquering the land, but lishmar lasos kechol haTorah asher tzivuchah Moshe avdi, to keep to the Torah. Al tasir menigam in a small. Don't think that your strength alone is what's going to help your success. You need to stick to the Torah. Leman tafkil mechol asher tilech, that you should be wise and successful in everything that you do. Lo yomer sefer haTorah zeh mipicha v'agisa bo yomam v'layla, and you can't, don't let go of this Torah. You have to toil in a day and night. Leman tishmor lasos kechol haTorah, both of everything that it says in it. Ki oz tatzeich haTorah v'oz tafkil. It's only when you're toiling in Torah together with the physical strength, they are going to be successful. It's interesting that this is the pasuk for the idea that Talmud Torah is a primary mitzvah. It's not just another mitzvah in the Torah. So matam osam es b'neichem. So it just sounds almost as if it's another mitzvah to do. And this pasuk is what Chazal is constantly quoting as that the primary mitzvah that we, which we're constantly need to be engaged in is that of Talmud Torah. Okay. Halot Sivisich, and then the third time he says, Chazak v'amatz al ta'arot v'al techaz, don't be weak, ki im v'chash and v'kechav v'chash etech, God is with you. So that is, the first nine psukim basically are the introduction and this transition of power for Yahushua. Let's push on a little bit. At that point, Yeshua got the message. God said, "Go ahead. You need to go out. You need to start conquering the land and taking over the land." So Yeshua commands the Shotrei Ha'am, the officers of the nation, saying, "The Malbim here says something fascinating, and it's just in terms of the chronology is very significant." He says that before Hashem spoke to Yehoshua, He had already told Reuven and Gad that they, in Chazi Sheva and Manasseh, that they need to be prepared to go and fight. He also had already sent out the spies. He did this all before Hashem spoke to him. Once Hashem spoke to him, he says that now he got that extra strengthening. Now he said, you know what, we're going to go ahead and do it, even if the spies haven't come back yet. That's it, isn't it? And I'll tell you in a second how he sees it in the psukim. But again, he understands that right now with Vayitzav Yehoshua Shotrei Amemor, right now he's saying, you know what? God said we have to go ahead and do it. We're not waiting for anything. Now we're going to go ahead, and these marshals, whoever they are, should go out and say, Ibru b'karav machane, go out to the camp, v'tzavu esam leimor, and command the people, hachinu lachem tzedot, to prepare, whether it means provisions or not, as a machlokas, based on whether they still had mun or not. The mun lasted longer than after the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. It didn't come down again, but it didn't spoil. Kiba, or it just means weapons. Kiba, oh, shloshes him in 3 days. Time at him over Masayadin Hazad. That's it. We're going in. To conquer the land. The next pasuk, he now speaks for the Reuveni, v'lagadi v'chatzi v'raman Hashem var Yosholimor. Now he speaks to Reuven God v'chatzi shevim and Hashem. The Malbim says on this that this pasuk took place before the Navi started, before Yoshua's Nebuah. Where did he see it? Beginning of Pasuk Yabez and continuing on through the episode of the spies. How does he see it? Because he says Vila Ruveni. What is the Vav Vila Ruveni? He says if Yeshua is shifting and speaking to him, it should have said Vayomer Yehoshua La Ruveni.
I don't understand which pasuk comes before what pasuk.
He's now speaking to the two and a half shvatim.
Right.
This, and he's going to tell them to prepare. We'll read the pasukim shortly, but basically he tells them to be prepared to go out and fight and to keep your deal that you made with Moshe Rabbeinu.
Right.
The Malbim says that these pasukim took place prior to Hashem speaking to Yehoshua in pasuk Beis.
Okay.
Took place before. How does he know? Because he says that the normal way that the Navi writes, if it's a conversation, would be Vayomer Yehoshua La Ruveni. Yehoshua said to the Ruveni, what is the Vila Ruveni? Vila, he says, connotes that it's something that he had already done in the past. It happened already. And that's the next bunch of psukim. But again, what you see is that Yehoshua was really, he took his role seriously. He was ready to go out and ready to fight. But he definitely was inspired by God telling him, I'm going to be with you. And that although he had already sent out the spies, he already told them to be prepared, he pushed ahead, we're going to do it even faster now.
Okay, so compare it to Shlachna, when God said, when Moshe
said... That we'll talk about more next time.
Okay.
We'll deal with more directly when we deal with the episode of the spies.
But Yeshua was ready to push forward and get them prepared even before the spies came back, right?
Right. So, at this point,
means he was saying
Vila means that he said it already. Vila Ruveni, and he said in the past tense to the Ruveni, not that Vayomer Yehoshua now to the Ruveni.
Yehoshua said in the past tense.
Correct.
Okay, before these two
people. Remember what Moshe told you. Hashem, God will lead you over there. You'll have your part. And give you the land. And your children and your wives and your cattle. Moshe will stay on the behavior yard on the other side. And you're going to have to be strong, you're going to have to fight, grab your weapons and go out and fight. Until when? Until they settle the land. Until the other tribes totally settle the land. Then you go back, and you'll inherit it. The land that Moshe gave you, on the other side of the Yarden. And they answered Yehoshua saying, whatever mission you give us, we're going to listen. And then he said, not only that, and again, this is just the last two psukim of the parak reaffirm what the message of the parak was, which is that Yehoshua is the real leader. Kechol asher shamanu Moshe, just as we listen to Moshe, kenishma ilecha, so too we listen to you. Rock. Yeah, Hashem Okechimach, only Hashem should be with you. So that's the first one that rock is sometimes the language of tefillah. They're saying, but Hashem should still be with you, Hashem should protect you. Kasher Yamoshe, so it's like Moshe. And then they take it a step further. Kol Isha Shayam Res Picha, I guess they don't know that God promised them that nobody's going to rebel. If anybody rebels against you, Vilo Yishma Sevrecha doesn't listen to you, the Chol Asher Tetzavenu, you must, we'll kill them. Rak Chazak Be'amatz. You are, and this is where the Chazal get the idea of Emorei B'machus, that somebody who rebels against a Jewish king is subject to be killed. So again, that brings us to the end of the parable of the Mirtash, and talk about the spies next time. But again, the beginning part is focusing on Yehoshua taking over as the leader of Moshe, Hashem giving him that confidence that you can fill that role, nobody will ever stand up to you, but now you have to go ahead and do it. And Yehoshua took it to heart, and he became a stronger leader, and he went out, even if he had already sent out the spies that I don't even need to wait for them, we're ready to go. And then the tribes accepted him, and that's what the important part again of setting the stage for the leadership of Yeshua is, that at the end the tribes say, whatever way, the same way we listen to Moshe, we're going to listen to you, and we will not stand for anybody who's possibly going to stand up. And
if they rebelled, who would kill? Hashem would kill them?
No, it sounds like the people are saying, yeah,
right.
So the assumption is that if they would do it, that they were allowed to do it. That's where the Gemara learns that from.
Wow.
And Be'ezus Hashem, next time I'll deal more with the exciting episode of the spies.